This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
It's been another hard day at the office for Sri Lanka in India. This is Sri Lanka 99.94. I'm Arvind Chadha from the Merrily End, and as always, I'm joined by Estelle Vargas-Devon from the Papere. Estelle, Sri Lanka lost by 67 runs in the first ODI to India. We'll get into the performance in a moment, in due course. The thing that's on my mind, though, is that Mankad. It's Mohammad Shami Mankading Dustin Sharnika when Dustin Sharnika is a 98 nuts out. With two balls left, Sri Lanka need, at that point, need like 80 odd runs per minute. So that's not going to happen, two balls. And then Rohit Sharma overturned the decision. At that moment, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. The next ball, obviously, that's when Sharma hits a four and he gets a century. But I woke up the next day and I was like, you know what? It's really disrespectful, isn't it? At that point, obviously, Sri Lanka had absolutely no chance of winning the game. But in hindsight, it just doesn't sit well with me for a number of different reasons. But the top reason, I just don't think it showed Sri Lanka respect that this team deserved to be shown. Sri Lanka on a basket case. Sri Lanka have won many things over the years. Sri Lanka have 11 good players out in the field. And three or four good players in the sheds waiting to be subbed on if needed to be. And on a different day, Sri Lanka can beat India. And I'm pretty sure at some point in the near future they will. I think the whole thing is disrespectful. Am I wrong, Estelle? Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting one, isn't it? Like, I mean, I think it made me think a lot about how I think about the dismissal, because I've been very pro. I've been for it in the past, right? But you're right. I think so many things to think about in this situation. I am not a fan of captains withdrawing the appeal, because I feel like that really puts your player under a lot of pressure, right? Because you expect your captain to back you. So I'm not a fan of captains withdrawing the decision, but I also don't think, I don't know if Shami was kind of 100% sure about it or serious about it also when he did it. Anyway, just coming back to like how the whole dismissal itself, it really, I think, made me question. I mean, we spoke about a tweet I saw by Lawrence Booth as well, how it made me question how we think about the dismissal, in that if it's not a clutch situation in the game, you know, you can just, you know, it's not the dismissal you should use, or that seems to be like kind of an unspoken thing in our heads. But I don't know. I think it's something that we need to wade through as well. Like, you know, introspect a little bit about how we think about the dismissal and, you know, how it should work. But this thing about disrespect, I didn't actually think about until you mentioned it, because you're right. It's almost like, you know, it's a kid, you know, let him go, let him bat again type of thing, right?
Exactly. It's the kind of thing you do when you're playing beach cricket, or when you're playing cricket outside your house, or when someone unexpected comes into bat and is having a swing. You go, oh, let them go. Just let it go. Let them have another bat, right? It's just that, like, I think from firstly, what I will say, just to clarify this all, I really like Rohit Sharma. He comes across as a really good bloke. He's a really incredible cricketer. And I don't think it came from a bad place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think he was doing it because this isn't a conversation to be had now, but around the whole kind of process of a man card, there is a lot of, obviously it's a very controversial thing to do, and also I think there's a lot of baggage when it comes to especially Asian players doing it as well, right? Yeah. And we know there's baggage with Rohit Sharma and the Sri Lanka team, and, you know, batsmen getting stuck on 98, not out, right? From Mohammad Shami's perspective, his job is to get wickets, right? The Indian bowling unit, their job is to get 10 wickets in a game, right? Or limit the runs. If they can limit you, if you can get nowhere near what the total that they could defend is and get all 10 wickets, then they've totally done their job. Two balls to go, 8 wickets down, that's still totally viable and possible when he's running, not to, when he's in the process of doing it, right? From a Sri Lanka perspective, I think you need to separate the fact that you had a player in mind and take one out. I think, in a way, considering how controversial a getting out in that way is, I think it's almost like the ultimate honour if you're a batter, if you're batting, but that's the way that had to get you out.
You can look at it in that way, right?
Yeah, I'm very pro that method of getting people out, right? I should say that I do think in real elite sport, you use every tool possible to try and win a game, right? If you go look at the best managers, your Guardiola and your Klopps in football, they use everything possible. They talk about how they, you know, they influence ball boys and the speed at which the ball comes onto the pitch. They influence everything they possibly can. And you definitely, if you're coaching, if you're managing, if you're looking after team, if you've got that as a possibility, you try and take it, right? And I suspect as more money comes into the game of cricket and it gets more professional, I think we'll see a lot more of it happening, unless there's a change in you know, the MCC and ICC saying you can't use it, whatever, right? What I should also add to that as well is I do come from a rugby playing background, where in rugby, almost the whole way point of the game is to try and push the rules as far as possible, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe I don't see it, and you know, there'll be people listen to what I'm saying and say Mark Machado is again talking nonsense. It is a horrible way to get people out. It's not within the spirit of the game. I'll be honest, I've supported Sri Lanka long enough to know that the spirit of the game isn't really a thing, doesn't really exist. If it did, they'd drunkenly play test matches on Boxing Day at the MCG and would have 5 test tours of England. So that whole argument for me is a total nonsense. I look at the moment, I just think it's the ultimate power play from the Indians to say, well, we could get you out, but we're not. We're going to let you bat on. And I think if I was in that Sri Lankan dressing room right now, I'd be using that to try and spur the boys on and be like, look how much disrespect they had for us. Look how little they think about us. They can't even be bothered to get us out when we're actually out. They let us have a go again, like it's Christmas Day and you're batting at the beach. I'm just going to take a breath. Should we take a quick break? When we come back, should we actually discuss the game, the rest of the game?
I'm Jared Kimber, and I host 2 podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game, with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-travelling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
Right, so it was the first ODI. As we mentioned, Sri Lanka lost it. We knew that India were going to be a handful. We knew that we had to get wickets, otherwise it was going to be a large score. And we knew that we had to be at our best in all departments, batting, bowling, fielding. And I think, Estelle, we sadly probably let ourselves down in all 3. That said, kind of 24 hours after the event, I think I can say, I don't think we were terrible at all 3. We just need to raise our standards at all of them. And actually, I think there's been a lot of talk about Sri Lanka. You know, some of it's come from us as well, being a pretty decent ODI team. But actually, I think this group of boys have a long way to go, don't they? They've got a lot of work to do between now and the World Cup, if they even get there.
Yeah, see, when you say that Sri Lanka is a good ODI team, I think there should be like a qualifier remark there. Like, in conditions like that, I don't think Sri Lanka can compete, whether it's ODI or T20 cricket. In T20 cricket, at least you have to stay with the opposition for a shorter period of time. So that makes Sri Lanka a lot more competitive. But in ODI cricket, where you have 50 overs, just in conditions that are so good for batting, I don't think at the moment Sri Lanka has the kind of firepower that can compete with a team like India. And that's not a new issue. It's been there for a while. Like, I mean, just looking back yesterday at what happened yesterday, like once India got to 373, I think even at that innings break, I don't know how many people legitimately believe that Sri Lanka could chase that down. Because if you look at the batsmen in that batting order, you know, if you're chasing 373, your top order has to make runs. And, you know, unlike India, who managed like with a few people getting a lot of runs or a few good innings, you'd expect like one guy to get a 150 and that's how you're going to chase a total like that, right? And I think during the broadcast, they also showed a scorecard of a previous game where Sri Lanka, you know, nearly chased a 400 plus score, fell 3 runs short. And just looking at that scorecard, it was the top three that got those runs. Upul Taranga, Dilshan got, I think, 160. Sangha got 19, like 50 odd deliveries. When you look at the batting lineup Sri Lanka has right now, and maybe over the last 5 years, you don't really have that guy who can get that 160. And I think maybe eventually that's going to happen. But at the moment, the conditions really, you know, whatever weaknesses Sri Lanka have, the conditions really show them off, whether it's power play bowling or bowling on tracks like that, or whether it's you know, the middle overs taking wickets, the support options for Hasaranga, because once Hasaranga was attacked, it seemed like, you know, and India have done that really well, I think, throughout even the T20s, where they have gone after Hasaranga, knowing that this guy relies on, you know, going for 3 to 4 runs and over and picking up a couple of wickets to give Sri Lanka that kind of stability from one end. So they've really gone after him, and that's kind of also, you know, put Sri Lanka off. So I think you're right. Sri Lanka have a long, long way to go, particularly in conditions like this. I think if it's bowling-friendly conditions, Sri Lanka have a good enough bowling attack to always be competitive. But when it's conditions where it's very, like, when it's the scales are tipped so much towards the batting side, then they're going to struggle.
Yeah, Hasaranga's not having a great tour, is he, so far? It feels to me like he's probably come up against the best batting lineup he's had to bowl against, I reckon. Think about the experience of these Indian players playing spin in their home conditions. He needs to rethink what he's doing a little bit, I think. I saw an interesting thread on Twitter talking about he's not actually getting the ball down the track as quickly as he used to. Maybe that's something you might want to look at. I don't know. I'm sure he's working with people and trying to, you know, there's much more intelligent people who have much better ideas than I do about these things. So I'm sure he's working with the right people to think about what's going wrong and what's going right for him. And I think you're right, right? I remember being at the Oval, I think in about 2013 or 2012, and Sri Lanka chased down a very large England school. They chose down 350, and at the, you know, for most of that game, it was Mahela and Sangha were batting, and we, you know, those two players are long retired. They're long retired and firmly in the commentary booth and in positions of management around franchise cricket. But I look at this team and think maybe there is a couple of players there who do kind of have the potential to be able to put those long innings in. And a couple of partnerships yesterday kind of gave me a slight glimmer of hope. that maybe that it might come along, but I think we're probably a little way away from it. And I think this India side is not only very good, but they're very experienced. They saw that deck and knew exactly how to play it. Sri Lanka, even after winning the toss, just weren't at the races yesterday. We'll talk about the Sharjah innings a bit later on, but I mean, if you take the Sharjah innings out of it, then it was a very mediocre batting performance by Sri Lanka, and they just kept losing wickets at the wrong moments, didn't they? It's a real, real shame. The other thing I was surprised by, obviously, I've talked extensively about being a Wallalage fan, and I was expecting him to play yesterday, but I wasn't expecting him to play at the expense of Thichana, who is, you know, he's only been in the side for about 15 months, I think, but he's definitely one of our more experienced bowlers and probably one of our more savvy bowlers as well. And someone I think could have been a bit more of a handful than the rest of our bowling attack was yesterday. Were you surprised to see him dropped?
Actually, I wasn't surprised to see him dropped because Sri Lanka, I think, found themselves in a position where they can't leave Wallalage out, because Wallalage did well against Afghanistan and they want to bring Chamika Karunaratne straight back into the side. So then they were left with the option of, do we, you know, go one batter short? The issue I have with it is not only, you know, everything you said about Thichana is right? He's a reliable bowler for Sri Lanka. He may not, like, people are going to look at his record and say he has an average of whatever, 30 plus, or, you know, no strike rate to talk about or whatever, right? But I think what gets lost in these numbers all the time is the fact that as a bowling unit, it's much more of a team thing than when you're batting, right? It's a lot about the roles you play and what type of, you know, combinations work well that makes a good bowling attack. And I think Thichana's strength is maybe not necessarily getting wickets. And we've seen, like, if you look at the last 2 to 3 years, he's played second fiddle to Hasaranga, right? Hasaranga is the guy everyone's talking about. He's the one who's winning the awards, going up in the rankings. You know, he's the one who's getting all the attention. But quietly, he's providing the kind of support role there that Hasaranga needs to get wickets. Particularly, I think he's much better suited to T20 cricket. But similarly, if you look at even the Jaffna Kings, right, this season, you'd have expected, now that Hasaranga is gone, Thichana takes the lead. But that didn't happen, right? Vyaskant came in again. Vyaskant was the guy getting all the headlines, getting all the wickets, you know. Everyone's talking about him. But if you look at the tournament as a whole, again, Thichana has put in a good performance there. He may not have as many wickets as Vyaskant. He's not even in the top five, I think. But just the control he provides in the power play. And I think the kind of stability he provides, in that Chanaka can bring him on at any point in that game and he could make something happen, or at least, you know, stop the runs flowing from one end so that something may happen on the other end. So I think that is what is most important about a guy like Thichana, right? And secondly, the fact is, you're playing Dunit Wallalage because he was brilliant with the bat in his last ODI, right? But you're batting him at number 9. So if your top 6 is not doing the job for you, there's no way you should be expecting your 7, 8, 9 to be doing it, right? I mean, Chamika Karunaratne can bat, so can Dunit Wallalage, but if you want to play all of them, you're going to waste their, you have to accept they're going to waste, you're going to waste their batting prowess by batting them so low down the order. So I think that's what's kind of disappointing. Sri Lanka always try to pick, you know, guys who can bat a bit, but it's, I mean, I like Dunit Wallalage. I think he's a really good find. He's good for limited overs cricket and he seems to have that character that you need at such a young age. But if you're playing him because he can bat well, then you shouldn't be batting him at number nine. That makes no sense.
So let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about, let's get a little bit into the batting a bit more and look ahead to the next match.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI. We've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
Yeah, definitely don't forget to follow 99.94 on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, I think they're on Facebook, and LinkedIn. I don't really use LinkedIn, but I'm going to get involved in it. My mum's a big fan of LinkedIn. Anyway, Estelle, I want to talk about the openers. I was expecting Kusumendis to open. He didn't open. Avishka opened. Second time we've seen Avishka in Sri Lankan colours this series after almost a year out with injury. He just doesn't look very... I felt he wasn't playing very with any sort of confidence. He doesn't feel confident. I mean, I don't know how you... when we talked about him in the past, we talked about how you need something to kind of boost him up and build that confidence in him. I mean, they've taken him to... on the first series that he's been available post-injury, and they've opened the baton in the ODI with him after basically... you know, moving one of our form players down the order for that. I don't know what more they can do in terms of showing him confidence. I really feel for the guy. And also, more importantly, I think, you know, as a Sri Lanka fan, it's so clear when you watch him in full flight, when he is playing well, that he is such a good striker of the ball and such a beautiful cricket to watch. I want to know, and I'm being slightly unfair, but I expect you to have the answer here. How do we get the best out of him? He's playing for Sri Lanka.
Yeah, firstly, I think they were absolutely right to bring him back to the top of the order. I think Kusumendis better suited to the middle order in ODI cricket because he plays spin so well. So he's a really valuable asset in the middle order. And Avishka has shown us what he can do, right, at the top of the order in ODI cricket. I wouldn't be too worried, to be honest, like, you know what he can do, and it's not like it's a potential or you see promise in him, but he's done good things in ODI cricket before at the top of the order. So you know it's coming. It's a matter of time. I wouldn't give him as long as he needs, right? Because he's gonna be a key player for you at the World Cup. If he manages to stay injury free and if Sri Lanka qualify. So I don't really have a problem with, you know, keeping him up there. I think the only thing they can do is give him opportunities. Obviously, coming in when you're chasing 373 is not going to be easy, particularly, I think, because when you're batting alongside Pathum Nisanka, generally the other guy is given the role of, you know, going after the bowling. It just didn't work out for Avishka yesterday, but I'm hoping he finds form in this series, but even if he doesn't, I think he's worth persisting with because obviously he's shown us what he can do, right? So I don't really see it as a huge problem for Sri Lanka. I think it's much more worthwhile to kind of look at that middle order again because Sri Lanka coming into this series on the back of a very good 2022, but you also have to look at what type of opposition we played and, you know, what type of conditions we played in, whether that's the type of games, those are the type of games you're going to get at the World Cup, I don't know, yeah.
So looking ahead, there's a game, I'm in Australia, I have absolutely no idea what time zone it is. I think for me, in about 20 hours, a game starts, the second match starts. Are you expecting them to have any more changes and where are you expecting those changes to be? Is Tinchner coming in? Are they going to tinker with the middle order? Might we see Sadira come in or maybe even a Windu getting a debut?
I think there might be a force change in the bowling attack because Dilshan Madhusankar has dislocated his right shoulder. So I think that'll be the, kind of the obvious change. I don't think there'll be a change in the batting order just because Sri Lanka, as a kind of a trend, have not tinkered much with the batting. I think they are looking at Dhananjay De Silva and Charit Asalankar as the, you know, number 4 and 5. So the only other options are in the top three, with Shanak obviously, you know, being so good yesterday at number 6. So I don't think there'll be many changes. I wonder if Sri Lanka would, you know, bring in Teekshana instead of Madhusankar and, you know, have Chamika Karunaratne take the new ball. I don't know whether, I'm not saying that's a good idea. I'm just saying, I don't know if that might happen because obviously Teekshana is a guy you would want in your side, right? Or we might see Lahiru Kumara, I don't know.
I should say I was very unfair there because me and you have both decided never to try and like make any sort of predictions around team selection or squad selection for Sri Lanka cricket, because who knows what might happen. And of course, whenever we do even raise the question, many people online decide to suggest that we are in some way in financial gain from these players, which I really would wish is true, but sadly is not. I don't wish that's true at all. But yeah, it's all we ever try and do to clarify. All we ever try and do is try and kind of suggest what might be happening in the minds of the various selectors and committees involved in Sri Lankan cricket, because yeah. I don't think anyone can second guess them in the whole world. And if they wanted to come on this show and explain what their thought process is, not that I think they at this moment in time they're probably getting more things right than they're getting wrong. But of course, if anyone from SLC wanted to come on, we'd happily have them on and ask them various questions about various different things. Estelle, should we leave it there? We'll be back, of course, in the next few days, talking about more of the action. I'm due to be in Sri Lanka in the next few days as well, so you might even get an in-person. When I say in-person, obviously you won't be there. You'll be still listening on the podcast or watching on YouTube or on the 99.94 app, wherever you get this show. But me and Estelle will be in the same room together for the first time ever, which... it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting Estelle in person.
Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals that you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.